Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
White America must recognize that justice for black people cannot be achieved without radical changes in the structure of our society.
That's actor and activist Danny Glover yesterday testifying before the House Judiciary Committee about H.R. 40, the bill designed to create a commission to discuss reparations for the descendants of slaves. The critical questions include, should America pay reparations for its original sin of slavery? And if so, how? Tonight, we're examining the historic hearing and the issues. My guests are Dr. Clarence Lussain. He is the chair of the Howard University Department of Political Science, and Marion Cohen, 18th and 19th century historian. Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Marion and Dr. Lussain, thank you both for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let me pose this question first, because we are at a very interesting time in modern American history, and where you could argue that we are more racially polarized than ever, politically more polarized than ever. We have a president that some love, some hate, and some ignore. With that said, why do you believe that this is coming up now, Dr. Lussain?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are going on. One is that the Democrats have taken over the House of Representatives. So you do not get a bill like this or get a hearing unless that happens. Now, there's a history that's really important. The bill was first introduced in 1989 by John Conyers, the former congressman from Detroit. So there's a long history of trying to get this issue. For me, there are two principles involved. One is just the recognition that there is a debt. And African Americans from essentially the 1600s to now have raised this again and again and again. And I want it to be clear that although Ta-Nehisi Coates' article that came out in 2014 really kind of set the fire on this, he acknowledges this, that he was picking up on something that Randall Robinson had wrote. Former head from Trans Africa called the debt. Randall Robinson was picking up from others before him. So it hasn't been an era where African Americans have not raised the issue. It's that I think at this point where the opportunity, because of the position of a number of African American Congress members, it can be raised in a forum that many have not seen it.
Marion, what happened to my 40 acres and a mule?
You know, that's a very good question. I think the interesting thing, being a historian of 18th and 19th century history, a lot of Americans just don't understand or want to learn about history. And if we don't start learning about it and understanding it, you know, we're going to be right where we are right now, and even worse, where we're repeating history. You know, the 40 acres and a mule was out there for a little while, but then, excuse me, it was rescinded. You know, I often say to myself, what if? What if Lincoln hadn't been killed? What if he was able to keep the federal troops back in the South or keep them down in the South? But once he was killed and they took the federal troops out of the South, everything turned back to what it had been before. Basically, slavery without the laws that they had previously had, but then they just replaced them with Jim Crow. So if you look at African Americans, we've been doing this struggle for a long time. You figure we have, you know, we're marking the 400th anniversary of when slaves first put foot on Virginia. And we're looking at over 200 years of enslavement. you know, after the war, 1865, we still did not have freedom until, you'd say, 1965. How can you have freedom if you don't, if you're not able to vote?
Let's talk about what Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the day before the hearing, Tuesday, in that there's no need to pay anyone reparations for slavery.
I don't think reparations for something that happened 150 years ago, for whom none of us currently living are responsible, is a good idea. We've, you know, tried to deal with our original sin of slavery by fighting a civil war, by passing landmark civil rights legislation. We've elected an African-American president.
What's wrong with that statement?
Everything. So, first of all, slavery was not a one-day incident, which is what McConnell seems to imply. It was an institution that existed for 250 years plus. And as Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote in his article, the main point isn't, and as Marion raised, isn't that it was just about slavery. It's about the entire history. And what many have called slavery by any other name is exactly what occurred after Reconstruction fell apart in 1877. And critical is that slavery as well as segregation was not just a case of a few bad racist individuals. It was government-sanctioned, government-performed, and government-rewarded. And so that's why everybody that's living today is affected by either having benefited from what occurred by the government for 400 years or are owed a debt by what happened by the government.
This is what Ta-Nehisi Coates said in response to the Senate Majority Leader yesterday. And I should say this is a part of what he said, because Mr. Coates said a lot yesterday.
More than 600 million, almost half of the economic activity in the United States, derived directly or indirectly from the cotton produced by the million-odd slaves. The method of cultivating this asset was neither gentle cajoling nor persuasion, but torture, rape, and child trafficking. Enslavement reigned for 250 years on these shores. For a century after the Civil War, black people were subjected to a relentless campaign of terror, a campaign that extended well into the lifetime of Majority Leader McConnell.
Am I overstating it, Marion? If I were to paraphrase what he's saying, is that there may be no America without slavery.
Oh, absolutely. The African Americans that came over here, the African Americans that came over here that were enslaved, they were not indentured servants, as many people like to portray them now. They came over here. They were not, they didn't buy a ticket to come over to America. And when they got here, they worked sun up to sundown 6 days a week. And that work in the summer in Virginia would be 5 a.m. till maybe 9 p.m. And we are talking brutal work. We're talking in the fields, cultivating tobacco, in the lower south. We're talking sugar cane and cotton. All of those things are part of the dynamics of the slave institution. And that slave institution was the engine that drove that car to economic success. I would like to say to Mr. McConnell, how many of your ancestors benefited, and are you still benefiting from slave labor from that time period? I'm sure if he were to look back in his family tree, he'd see a lot of benefit of where if his ancestors had enslaved people, that he's probably still benefiting from it. And if you go around and you look at the Capitol, you look at the White House, all of those things were built by slave labor. Labor that slaves who did not get paid. We talk about the physical abuse, but we also need to talk about the psychological abuse of being a slave. Dr. Orlando Patterson talks about social death, how enslavement took away your identity and who you were. There's so many levels of slavery that most people don't even understand.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the argument for and against slave reparations. Of course, all of this one day after a congressional hearing on H.R. 40, that 40 symbolic of the 40 acres and a mule that was promised to enslaved black people in this country after the Emancipation Proclamation. Let's go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Tony, calling from White Plains. What's on your mind? And turn your radio down for me, Tony, please. Go right ahead.
All right. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, look. Okay, here it is. We were held, our ancestors were held as collateral to build Harvard, Yale, and all these prestigious schools. You benefited from it, and we can't go to it. We have to strive harder to try to compete to be in these schools and things like that. There's been so much damage, and it's not all the white people, but those forefathers that has brought that to the table. You gotta own up for it. You are in an economic class that's above African Americans because of slavery. Let's even the field. You lost out big time on the 40 acres and the mule, and you're steadily building houses on the land that should go to the descendants.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tony. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ricky, calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Go right ahead.
Yes. I just want to keep it short and simple. It's way overdue. It's way overdue. That's it.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ricky. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Janice calling from Fairfax. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I think reparations should be paid in spades. We should have tax-free. We should be tax-exempt, federal and state. I think anyone that doesn't own land should be given some grants where they can get some without down payments. College tuition, I want it all back.
Well, there you go, Janice. Thank you so much. Which brings me to this next comment that was made during the hearing. And this was made by Republican and Subcommittee Ranking Member Mike Johnson. He said there is a legal question that needs to be answered.
The federal government can't constitutionally provide compensation today to a specific racial group because other members of that group, maybe several generations ago, were discriminated against and treated inhumanely.
How complicated is this, Dr. Lusain?
It's not that complicated. Again, first of all, there has to be a principle a recognition that there was a theft. Black labor, men, women, children, small children, for generations had their labor stolen without compensation. It happened during slavery, and it happened during the post-slavery period. Again, I want to emphasize that it wasn't the end of slavery in 1865 did not end state-sanctioned and state-operated exploitation of black people. For example, one of the things that Ta-Nehisi Coates talked about is that in the 1930s, with the programs that were passed, Dr. Julianne Melveaux, who spoke at the hearing, she talked about how that the policies that were passed in the New Deal, revolutionary policies that were great for labor, excluded African Americans. So you had, for generations, African Americans who were paying taxes that went to Social Security, that went to other programs that African Americans did not benefit from. So it has been a long, long, long haul. And recognizing that is the first step, and then figuring out what does that translate to in terms of ways in which that debt can be paid is something, you know, for people a lot smarter than me to figure out. But it absolutely has to be acknowledged that for generations up until now, from 1619 to the Central Park Five, this country has mistreated African Americans, and it's time to pay that debt.
Marion, let me ask you, one of the things that came up, Ta-Nehisi Coates brought this up, and where he said reparations in the United States for marginalized or groups that have been offended or damaged or hurt is nothing new. He mentioned that Civil War soldiers after the war were paid some sort of reparations. Can you touch on some of that at all? What's he talking about?
Well, you know, if you look at our history, many groups or ethnicities have been given reparations. If you look at the Japanese Americans who were interred during World War II, they were granted. The Native Americans were given some. It seems that America does not want to have the conversation about slavery. That's the bottom line. And we need to sit down and have a conversation and understanding about what slavery is. And then we need an apology. We need an apology from this nation that says, we're sorry. And we need an acknowledgement from this nation about all the things that African Americans did to build this country. I dare say without our ancestors' labor, we would not have much.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break. When we come back, your phone calls. We're going to talk to Courtney from Fort Washington, Anita from Columbia. I think it's Enden from D.C. Say Nada from D.C. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. You'll be able to hear the program. Don't hang up. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about H.R. 40. Debated yesterday on Capitol Hill, it is about slavery reparations. H.R. 40 would create a committee to study the issue. We're talking about that issue tonight with Dr. Clarence Lussain, chair of the Howard University Department of Political Science, and Marion Cohen, 18th and 19th century historian. Lines are open. If you can't get through, please keep trying at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, I was just kind of listening to what I was saying. This H.R. 40 will, if it were to be passed, would create a committee to study this issue, which is exactly what was happening yesterday. You know, it was an oral study on the issue. Isn't that a bit redundant? Isn't it time for us to start making a decision?
Surely it is. And the thing is that many, many, many people have been studying this issue for clearly many decades. What we have not had is the reach and the depth of a government study of this process, where the resources that simply is not available to your ordinary researcher are not available. So that makes sense. And that's what John Conyers was trying to do as he first proposed this now 30 years ago. But clearly we have to go beyond just a study, because that simply is not going to resolve the issues that the callers have been bringing up. And as Marion points out, goes back to 1619.
Marion, is this a money issue? If it's about writing checks, who gets paid?
I don't think it's just about money. I think it's also about being having equality. If you look at the problem, people like Mitch McConnell and other whites have had generational wealth. They've gotten wealth from their grandparents, their great-grandparents. It's almost like we have started a race, and they are 100 yards ahead of us, and the African-American community is just starting the race, but they've got a ball and chain around their ankle. So to me, it's not just about money. It's about helping us create generational wealth, helping us make something to leave for our children and our children's children. And that would look like grants for small businesses, grants for education. You know, one way to keep a people down is to not educate them, because once you give them knowledge, you can't take that away. And after the Civil War, do you know, in 1860, there were about 4 million enslaved African Americans in the southern states. And when they were emancipated, about 90% of them were illiterate. In Virginia, it was against the law to teach a slave or a free person to read or write. So to keep someone down through education is a tool that's used. So we need to look at creating businesses, supporting our businesses, getting our kids educated, and financial aspects of how we can have generational wealth.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Anita calling from Columbia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to say part of the damage from slavery has left our people to think that we're not even entitled to it. That's why some of us are so laid back and just waiting for someone to tell us what we should be entitled to. And it's part of a brainwash. For the speeches, for the people giving speeches, I applaud you. Please keep giving speeches. Please keep educating our people, because we're just so groomed to not think we're entitled to anything. We should be front and center, every single person, but we're not doing it because of the damage. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Adian. Nada, forgive me. You have a unique spelling of your name. What's on your mind?
Actually, she got the name wrong, but that's irrelevant. I want to talk about Mitch McConnell.
Go right ahead.
Here's a bigger and a racist and a hypocrite. He said, "We have given you a black president." As if, and what else do you guys want? What? No, they did not give us a black president. We voted in a black president contrary to what they wanted. Okay? They did not give us a black president. This is not about money. This is about them standing up for what they want. They're racist. They believe in what they want. They want white power. They do not want to acknowledge racism as a problem. They don't think slavery is a problem. They still don't think slavery is a problem. They do not think slavery is a problem. Okay. We have given you a black president, and you guys need to be quiet. No. No, no, no. They didn't give us a black president.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I think to this point, when you're talking about the divisions on this issue, it seems to come down to black and white, progressive and liberal, as we saw, or progressive and conservative, as we saw during the hearing on yesterday. There were two black conservatives there who were rejecting the idea of reparations and the like. But even more to the point, Dr. Lussain, is this something that the majority of white people just will not understand because of their political leanings? Because slavery is slavery, no matter whether you're conservative or progressive or independent. History is what it is.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. So one is that reparations is presented to whites as a zero-sum game.
What do you mean by that?
That if blacks advance, then it means whites are not advancing. Not that the entire country is lifted if the black community and communities that are marginalized actually begin to move forward. But it's a zero-sum approach. This is what we get from the president, and certainly this has been kind of a line for the Republican Party. And so that means that for whites, there's a knee-jerk reaction to anything that seems to be a threat. And then you couple that with the demographic changes that are happening in the country and the absolute freak-out that's occurred across white America, then reparations becomes just another data point for this fear of destruction of white America. And the whole notion of making America white again, you know, carries some weight in that context.
Is this a denial about white privilege where if you've generationally have benefited from white privilege, but that is the floor for you? That is that's where you start in a privileged society. And so do you think that denying that you are benefiting from white privilege is also the knee-jerk reaction for a lot of white people who just say no to reparations?
I think if you look at history too, right after the Civil War, right after Reconstruction, there was a thing called revisionist history. And the South basically said, you know, we lost the Civil War, but after Reconstruction, we won the Civil War. And it was teaching generations that slavery was not bad, it was good for the African American, so on and so forth. The books, the school books that were given to children did not tell the true story of slavery. So it was almost like whitewashing, if you might say, of the African American history and the experience of being enslaved. There is a fear, I believe, from those who have white privilege that they're going to lose something. And if you look at those that fought in the Confederacy, they were fighting not because most of them had slaves, most of them were poor. They were fighting for the idea of having a slave.
Well, there was always the possibility
of becoming
a slave owner.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Damien calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Yes, Harold, first of all, thank you for affording me the opportunity to share my thoughts. Slavery on its face is an abomination before God. And we say that this is the United States of America, and on our money we say, in God we trust. And I don't think there should be any fear in any ethnicity or any community in America regarding reconciling and owning our mistakes. We own our successes, right? With the stock market, if you make 3,000% or more in the course of 10, 20 years, you're saying, yay, fantastic, right? But that happened, the seeds for that benefit were planted 20, 40, 100 years ago. Well, the same holds true of our failures. We have to own them. We have in all of our communities, in the community of Americans of African heritage or lineage, we have to own our mistakes and our contribution to subjugating ourselves or allowing ourselves to be subjugated to criminality. Irrespective of what we face in the context of adversity, we can never turn to criminality. You can't fight evil with evil. At the same time, Americans of European or Caucasian heritage and ancestry need to own what they did, and they need to make reparations for it. And it needs to begin with an apology, a sincere, heartfelt apology, because until they do it without fear and in the absence of, they should understand what it is that they did and own it, and they can do so in the absence of fear without worrying about whether or not it destabilizes this, that, or the other, because we do trust in God collectively, irrespective of our hue, our ethnicity, or our cultural background.
Well, Damien, thank you so much. So here's the question that Damien has raised. So who apologizes? Which white guy or white woman do we pick to do? Is it the president? Is it the Daughters of the American Revolution. Who do you pick to and I'm being, you know, tongue in cheek, but
I say all of them. So, and by that I mean, as some of the callers have pointed out, it is a collective responsibility that needs to be admitted to. There, after the testimony on the Hill yesterday, there was another meeting around reparations, and there was a white woman there who talked about her family. She had discovered later in life her family had held slaves. And so it took a journey for her family, but they finally got to the point where they acknowledged, you know, that who they are today is because of what happened during the slave era. So that has to be taken. And again, it's not a punishment of every single white person, but it does mean that you recognize history, you recognize what happened, and that there was some people, there was a collective benefit, and there was a collective theft. And you were on, you benefited or you were harmed by one side of those.
You know, when I interpret, I interpret 18th century enslavement at Monticello. And when I'm interpreting from a standpoint that it's not in anger and it's not in apology. It is history. And that's where we need to get to. The country needs to first acknowledge the fact that they held X amount of people in bondage for X amount of years, and then they need to have a national apology. And I agree with you, Doctor. It needs to be collectively. It needs to be a whole lot of folk that apologize.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tanya calling from D.C.
Hi, I wanted to comment on why I thought, or why I think that the conversation is not happening. And I believe it's because the idea of slavery is we're still living it. It's a psychological conditioning of the mind that I just never thought in my lifetime that I would see aspects of slavery being instituted, institutionalized right now. When they took last year those kids from their family, that was classic. That was one of the first things they did to separate the families. That's a generational affecting the mind. And I think the problem is that they're using the ideas and the ideology, and they're giving some of us, you know, are like rising and not pulling each other up. And we come from that place where, oh, I got mine, they need to get there, stop living in the past. But the past has cultivated the future, and they're still using those ideas of whether it's what's happening with the police where they're killing black people, uh-huh, or whether it's the idea of being a server in a restaurant. I don't think that people realize that was born out of, that came into being out of slavery. I was a server in college myself. I never realized until I understood that whole idea of working in a restaurant came out of people that didn't even want to, you know, conform to the idea that I have to pay for services. I think is so.
Let me stop you there, Tanya, and see what Marion has to say historically about what you're suggesting. But thank you so much for your phone call, Mary.
I agree. I think that we have been for so long kept down. I look at my own family history where, you know, I was born and raised in Fairfax County, which is a pretty affluent place for some folks. And they didn't even have a high school for their African-American students until 1956. Well, Brown versus Board of Education was 1954. So why are you just building a segregated high school in 1956? My mother had a sixth grade education. I'm the first person in my family to have a college education. And, you know, I'm 60 years old. So we have been held back for so long, and our history has been hidden from textbooks, school lectures, all of those things. and that's why I'm out here. I'm out here because I want people to learn our history, to learn what happened, and then once we are better educated, then we can go out and we can demand what it is that we need.
But Dr. Lusane, can you legislate prejudice and racism?
You can't legislate how people think. You can legislate the consequences of people acting on that thinking. And that's what really needs to happen. We are in a situation where the data shows that the majority of whites now in the United States, 2019, believe that racism against whites is more prevalent than racism against African Americans or anyone else. So we're fighting, as Marion points out, a mindset. So it isn't just a way in which people kind of personally are benefiting. There is a mentality. There's a stance that people have that is absolutely refusing to recognize this history. And it explains a lot in terms of where we're at politically and how the country is divided, as you talked about earlier. So we've got an uphill battle. But it's one that's been fought. I'd like to point out that in 1896, I believe it was, there was a woman in Tennessee, Callie House, who started an association of ex-slaves. It was called the Ex-Slaves Association. And they fought for pensions for people who had been held in slavery. At that point, close to 15-20% of African Americans had been enslaved. So this is a long haul. This is a long struggle that people are trying to carry out. So when Mitch McConnell and others want to pretend that they don't know where this issue came from and we've got a black president and we're post-racial and all of that, they are absolutely ignorant of the history that Marion talks about and that other people have fought for centuries now.
Let's go to Pam calling from Virginia. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I'm
calling, and I'm probably going to be the only person saying this. I think this is ridiculous. Ask them to apologize and leave it alone. This is so ridiculous. That how are you going to get money for what, over a million people? And like someone said, I don't know if it was on that panel or yesterday on the news, how are you going to find out some of these people, some of us African Americans, you're so far back through the generations, how are you going to figure out who gets money for what? And then the question is, how much money do you get? Does this person get, let's say, $100 and this person get $25? This is just going to create another problem. Ask them to apologize. I have no problem with that. A collective apology and then be done with it. This is so ridiculous.
Okay. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think the caller misses the point. There are the people who have been writing and talking about reparations have never said this boils down to how many dollars each individual African American gets, because that doesn't make any sense, and that hasn't happened anywhere historically. What does make sense, though, is that there are a collective ways that the black community can benefit by the country prioritizing addressing some of the issues that have persisted in the black community for decades and for generations. That's what people are talking about, not about somebody getting $100 or $50 and fighting over that. So I think the caller misses the point of the people who have been talking and leading around reparations movement over the years.
Pam from Virginia. Pam, what's on your mind?
I just want to say that I think America is an apartheid America. That's just what I think about it. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you so much. There was a discussion yesterday about Jim Crow and the world after emancipation being the American apartheid. Your thoughts about that, Marion?
Well, after Reconstruction and we go into the Jim Crow era, African Americans really still are not free. Many in the Deep South, young men are being put in prison and they're being leased out as workers for plantation owners who need them to work on their farms. I look at the fact that we really have not become a citizen until 1965 when we had the right to vote. And you look at it now, they're still trying to suppress the vote. So there are still things that we have to fight for. Inequality has just been so ingrained in our DNA that we have to fight for everything that we need, that we feel we're supposed to have, which is the right to vote, the right to housing, right to education, all of those things.
Go ahead, Ray.
So we've talked a number of times. We've mentioned Reconstruction, and I want to circle around that. Because after slavery, the radical Republicans that were in Congress felt that they actually had to do something for people who came out of slavery. So as was mentioned earlier, schools were built. Hundreds and hundreds of schools, many of which were attended by whites who for the first time in their life were able to go to school. There was land that was given to African Americans. It wasn't 40 acres and a mule to every single individual, but there were hundreds of thousands of acres that were land. The Freedmen's Bank was created, and so loans were given for African Americans to start small businesses. So there's a history there where there was an effort to deal with the situation facing people coming out of slavery, but then that was overthrown at the end of Reconstruction in 1876, 1877. Then we get what has been referred to as the re-enslavement that goes all the way up till the 60s.
Back to the phone lines. Jesse calling from Quincy, Florida, down there in Gadsden County. What's going on, Jesse? What's on your mind? Jesse, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, I just had a comment to Pam from Virginia. Well, first, we can, for the reparations, they can at least give the 40 acres and a mule, as the gentleman mentioned. But I saw a video by Mr. Paul Robeson where he was discussing if he was proud to be an American. And he said that America started out, you have to have primary wealth to build the country or something to that extent. And I'm thinking, if you do work for somebody and they don't pay you, are you just going to forget about it and write it off and say, well, that's a loss? I don't think so. I think you should be in some form compensated. It doesn't have to be money. It doesn't have to be anything, you know, dealing with money per se, but at least some type of compensation should be given.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse. I appreciate that. A few minutes left here. If it isn't about money, and Marion, you touched on this a bit, should the descendants of slaves get some kind of, for lack of a better term, a discount, whether it comes to, you know, education, you know, Georgetown University, because of its issue regarding the selling of slaves, to save the university, is allowing those descendants to admission, and there's still the issue of whether or not those descendants would pay, but at least their admissions consideration is allowed to move forward without some of the same kinds of hurdles that other students would have to hop over. But what about that? Do you get an 800 credit score for a year? do you get a 20% discount on the college or university, you know, of your choice? Do you get some kind of consideration?
I don't look at it that way. The way I look at it is, it's a action to get us to equality, because we've never really gotten to equality. We've lacked in education and housing and all the other things that the whites have had. This is just, to me, it's even more than just reparations. It is a mindset. We need to change the minds of people that you know, we need equality. We, and like the doctor said, during Reconstruction, people owned their own houses. They had bank accounts. They were prosperous. So if given an opportunity, equality is there. But if you stop a person from doing it, then it you don't have that. So reparations is a way of saying, acknowledging what happened, apologizing what happened, and then putting systems in place, not necessarily giving people $40 or 40 acres. Give them education. You know, give them grant-free loans. Give them grant-free loans for small businesses. We need, or we should be able to have some way to create generational wealth. And others have had that opportunity.
Dr. Lusain, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah. Reverend William Barber, who's picked up the Poor People's Campaign that Dr. King fought when he was assassinated, has called for a third Reconstruction. And he outlines that by talking about restorative justice, that it is critical that we implement a principle that says there's a debt, that debt has to be paid, and we can figure out how to do it. And the commission that Conyers initially talked about, and then Sheila Jackson Lee, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, held a hearing around, is to step back and do a critical analysis of what exactly has been the harm of being denied education for generations, being denied property for generations, being denied the right to own property for generations. And so once you begin to figure that out and figure out both institutional responsibility as well as governmental responsibility, then you can begin to talk about what does that mean in terms of compensation.
I think that's a good place to stop. Dr. Clarence Lusain and Marion Cohen, thank you both for talking to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Thursday, June 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.
The Howard University Radio.